Rodney hummed happily under his breath as he carefully separated out the new gun's components and spread them across the bench. "Aha! Got you," he said, pouncing on a small crystal that he was 90% sure was disintegrator core. "You're cheerful. This worries me," Roddick said from across the bench. He was supposed to be running a diagnostic on the armor factory, but Rodney knew he was actually 3D modeling his paper airplane's flight. "Of course I am. Disintegrator beams," Rodney said. "Tell me you're not." He went back to work. He wanted to finish up quickly. Before he left at the same ungodly hour that Shepard went running, John had kissed him hard and said, "Lunch?" almost shyly. He'd been planning to work through lunch. He had a lot of work to do. They had a paper airplane test flight planned in the evening. But John had looked so appealing, with his track pants slouched onto his skinny hips and his bedhead gone crazy, that Rodney had had to say yes. He really didn't regret it. "Yes, disintegrator beams." Roddick pushed his glasses up his nose. "But we had disintegrator beams yesterday, and you were not so..." He made a swirly gesture and went on. "So something happened after you left the labs." "Oh!" he gasped. "Or somebody happened, yes?" "Roddick, do you need to see Carson about those delusions?" Rodney tried for withering, but the pleasant ache of well-used muscles made it hard to be in a truly bad mood. "Well, am I correct?" Roddick leaned forward. "A gentleman does not kiss and tell," Rodney said loftily. He examined the crystal. If they could make them larger, they could slot them into the jumper's control panel. Roddick snorted. "You? A gentleman?" "Still not telling," Rodney said. He thought back to that morning of John, all lithe muscle, the freckles on his collarbone, an unexpected gift, pinning him to the slippery tile in the shower and fucking him hard and fast, stroking his cock just this side of rough. "We'll do this properly later," John had drawled in his ear, sounding like sex incarnate. "But I've been staring at your ass for 3 years, and I can't wait another minute." With that, he had bucked his hips even harder and came. Rodney came seconds later, thinking that if they did it properly, it might just kill him. "Rodney?" Roddick called him from his daydream, and he started guiltily. "Sorry, Roddick, you'll have to go somewhere else for your girlish gossip." He began to gather up the pieces to reassemble the gun. "Ah, well, I am very happy for you both," Roddick said. "Both? Who said anything about both?" Roddick looked around, checking that there was nobody close by. "Rodney, there is no need. Is Colonel Shepard, yes?" Panic gripped Rodney. "Do you want to get him sent back to Earth?" he hissed, appalled. "Has not happened yet. Most people think you've been together years, and the rest of us wonder what took you so long. I think all will be fine." Rodney was reminded that Roddick was a perceptive little bastard, and was probably correct. "You think so?" He was still worried. It would be just his luck to finally have John, and then ruin it by being so transparent anyone could see John was breaking the rules. "I do. So, I am right yesterday?" Rodney nodded slowly. "Excellent! I must tell Elizabeth." "What? No, she needs plausible deniability," Rodney spluttered, although Elizabeth, a born romantic if ever there was one, would probably be on their side. "She suspected long ago. And besides," Roddick grinned, looking suddenly boyish, "she won the pool." "You are wrong. Quite monumentally and hideously wrong," Rodney declared. He folded his arms and glared at John. "Rodney," John said slowly, "we are going to do this my way." He put the papers he was working on down and stepped forward. "But it won't work your way. The way it will be too far forward, we'll get nosedives," Rodney insisted. "Not if we fold it how I showed you. It will work." "I'm sorry, who's the engineer here?" Rodney had his "do not push this" face on, smug and insistent. It never failed to make John want to wipe it off. "Who's the pilot here?" he asked. "Rodney, my way will work. I'm doing it." "No, you're not." "Yes, I am." "No, you're..." John could see this descending into some pretty undignified bickering, so he did what he'd always wanted to do in a situation like this. "You're unbelievable, McKay," he said finally. He twisted both hands into Rodney's shirt and pushed him up against the wall. Rodney hit it with a startled huff, but immediately grinned, slowly and wickedly, and settled his hands on John's hips. "Unbelievable, am I?" "Oh, yeah, absolutely," John said, pushing Rodney more firmly into the wall and kissing him hard. Rodney obligingly spread his legs, allowing John to settle in between his thighs. John kissed him again, flattening his hands out to Rodney's chest, teasing his nipples, sweeping his tongue into Rodney's mouth, growing a little giddy on it, on the warmth of Rodney's body against him, the feel of Rodney's hands on him. He still couldn't quite believe he was allowed to do this, that he could kiss and touch as much as he wanted. Rodney pulled his mouth away, looking a little dazed. "Hmm," said John, complainingly, missing Rodney's mouth and settling instead for tucking his face into the crook of Rodney's neck. "Yeah, hmm," Rodney petted his head. "What were we arguing about?" Rodney trailed his fingers up the inside of John's arm. "I have no idea." "May I have your attention, everybody?" Elizabeth tapped the mic, and Chuck killed the music. She continued. "Firstly, congratulations to Colonel Shepard and his team on winning the tug of war. I hope you enjoy your movie privileges." Rodney rubbed his wrists. It had been a hard fight, but the prospect of decent movies for a month was a great motivator. Elizabeth continued. "Secondly, are you all having a wonderful time on our first fun day?" There were ragged cheers of "Woo!" and "Yeah!" from the assorted crowds gathered in the definitely not a ballroom. Rodney huffed. He'd had a major breakthrough yesterday when, after a week, he and Zelenka had worked out how to replicate the disintegrator crystals. They'd run the machinery for the first time last night, and he'd wanted to carry on testing it. Elizabeth, however, had firmly told everyone, with the exception of essential patrols, that they had the day off. Rodney had wanted to hide away until it was time for the cookout and the airplane championship, but John, playing dirty, had turned up to collect him wearing low-slung jeans and a well-washed flannel shirt open just enough to show those damn freckles, and Rodney had temporarily lost the ability to speak, let alone complain. Elizabeth continued. "We've had another tough year. Sometimes, I admit, I thought we were done for, but even when we thought our city lost, we got her back. When our people were taken, we rescued them. We've made discoveries that will improve the lives of people in two different galaxies. I am proud of each and every one of you. I love you all, and I think we deserve one fantastic day today, don't we?" Elizabeth stepped down from the stage as cheers filled the room and the music started again. "She kind of reminds me of my elementary school teacher," Rodney whispered to John. "Is that good?" John asked. "Yeah. Mrs. Hopman always let me play with the Legos while the others were reading. I built her a spaceship." Rodney remembered fondly. She'd been pretty cool, Mrs. Hopman. "Oh, hey," he said, breaking off from his reminiscences. "The cookout started. Come on, I want to get to the ribs before Ronan does." He hurried away through the crowd, then stopped. John was just standing there, head tilted, staring at him. Rodney felt his cheeks heat. "Well, are you coming?" he managed. "There'll be nothing left." John strolled over to him. "Some of us aren't as ruled by our stomachs, McKay," he said mildly. "Yes, well, I've been getting a lot more exercise of late." Rodney looked at him out of the corner of his eye. "I need to keep my strength up." John snorted, but Rodney felt the ghost of a touch over the small of his back as they joined the line for the food. It all looked fantastic. Sticky barbecue ribs, char-grilled corn, the Athosian dish that was just like lamb kebabs, chicken wings, salads, an entire table of dessert. Rodney piled up his plate, ignoring John's amused chuckle behind him. "You got enough there?" he asked. "For now, yes." Spotting an empty bench and table in the far corner, he sat down. John slid in next to him, pressing his calf against his. "You know," he said, around a mouthful of kebab, "I was thinking, with the airplane, we could..." "Jeez, finish chewing, Rodney, that's gross," John complained. "Oh, come on, you've had..." He was about to say, "Your tongue in my ass," but changed it to, "Giant life-sucking bugs on you. That's way more gross." "I still don't need to see what you're eating. Suck it up." "Not quite what I was intending to s—" "John, Rodney," Elizabeth broke in, "may I join you?" Rodney knew how they must look, pressed together like that. He tensed up, then felt John's hand on his knee under the table, squeezing. "Sure," said John. "Plenty of room." She sat and bit into a chicken wing. "Congratulations again on the tug of war," she said. "Thanks. Though having Ronan helps," John said, patting Rodney's knee under the table and flattening his hand out on Rodney's thigh. "Hey, what about me?" Rodney complained, teasing. John bumped his shoulder with his. "You helped too." "Thanks for the ringing endorsement, Colonel." "It's what I do." Elizabeth looked sharply at both of them. Rodney knew it was coming a second before she said, "I see Roddick was right." He would kill him. They'd never find the body. He'd... "Elizabeth," John began, in his low, soft, cross me and regret it voice, "if..." "John," she said calmly, "I wish you had told me." "It's fairly new," Rodney admitted, finding his voice. He slid his hand on top of John's on his thigh and wove their fingers together. "That does surprise me," she said, a laugh coloring her voice. "Is it going to be a problem?" John asked. He squeezed Rodney's hand hard enough to hurt. "Not if you're discreet. A lot of people owe you favors." "Woolsey!" Rodney said suddenly. "We saved his damn life. He definitely owes us something big." "And owes me even more favors," Elizabeth continued. She looked them both straight in the eye, and Rodney felt just the same as when Miss Hopman had caught him trying to re-engineer the water wheel with the contents of Sophie Wenger's pencil case. "Don't make me have to call them in. That's all I have to say." Rodney felt John relax against him, the feeling returning to his hand as John let go. "Thanks," John said, heartfelt. "Yes, thank you," Rodney echoed. She smiled at them. "I wish I didn't have to warn you. Who knows, maybe in a few years..." She trailed off. "Anyway, enjoy your meal, and best of luck in the airplane championship." Rodney watched her go with a huge sense of relief, John's foot hooked around his ankle as they ate. John propped his chin on Rodney's shoulder, watching his hands work. He loved Rodney's hands, even more so now he knew how they felt on his body. "Is it ready?" he asked. "Almost." Rodney made one final crease and held the airplane up. "There, one championship-winning airplane." John took it carefully, and they made their way over to where all the other teams waited. Lauren was marking out distance lines on the floor. John looked across the other teams, Zelenka and Chuck, Miko and Sergeant Seeley, all the way down to Katie Brown and Capo Vasquez. "Okay, guys," Lauren spoke above the hubbub. "You get 3 flights. We award points for distance and for time in the air. Highest average wins. Dr. Weir will measure all the flights, so no arguing." Rodney and John had drawn the final number, much to Rodney's disgust. John didn't mind. At least they knew what they had to beat, instead of nervously waiting around. Katie and Vasquez's flight was a complete disaster. The airplane was obviously far too heavy, and it made a fairly spectacular nosedive in each of its 3 flights. Rodney clicked his tongue. John hoped he was wondering what he ever saw in her. As if he could read his mind, Rodney said, "Smugness is not an attractive quality, Shepard." "Did I say anything?" John asked innocently. "You didn't have to." Rodney's mouth turned up in a smirk, and John reminded himself that nibbling on his lower lip was kind of the opposite of discreet. He was already beginning to regret bullying Rodney into wearing the cargo pants, although the view was definitely worth it. Miko and Seeley had 2 good flights, and John was starting to worry when Miko screwed up the launch of the 3rd flight and sent it into the floor. When Roddick and Chuck stepped up to the mark, Rodney eyed them intently. "These are the ones we need to beat," he said. "Hey, if we don't, it's not the end of the world," John said soothingly. "You said we were unbeatable," Rodney reminded him. Well, if we lose, I'm sure I can find a way to make it up to you, he said. You'd better, Rodney said, eyes glittering with promise. Roddick and Chuck remained at the top of the list on the big whiteboard right up to the end. And now, our last contestants, Lorne announced, Colonel Shepherd and Dr. McKay. They stepped up to the line. You want to launch it? John offered. As you keep reminding me, you're the pilot. Just don't screw up. Ronnie stepped back, and John carefully balanced the airplane and launched it. He held his breath, but the airplane dropped a few inches short of the line marking Roddick's furthest flight. 106 feet, Elizabeth called out. 65 seconds. Lorne wrote the numbers on the board. John retrieved the plane, checked the folds, and launched it again. This time it was level. John did some math as Elizabeth measured and Lorne wrote, and worked out they were only a few points behind. Last one, Rodney said tensely. Do that again and we've won. I'll do my best, John said. When the airplane left his hand, he knew it was a good flight. It seemed to hang in the air forever, and John watched, almost too afraid to breathe, as it floated, beautiful, elegant, and finally swooped down to land a full foot ahead of the furthest mark. Rodney clutched his arm as Elizabeth measured. That was amazing, he said, grinning. I mean, I knew we'd win, but we completely destroyed them. We did, didn't we? Rodney still hadn't let go of his arm, but he guessed it could be excused. 111 feet, 81.78 seconds, Elizabeth confirmed. That's only a foot away from the world record. Which makes our final team the winners, Lorne announced, adding up the totals. Let's have a big round of applause for all our contestants. John found himself engulfed in a hug as the room broke out into cheers. We are totally celebrating properly later, Rodney muttered into his ear as he let go. John felt this was an excellent suggestion. Elizabeth took the mic from Lorne. Well, that almost marks the end of today, she said. I've had a wonderful time, and I hope you all have too. The cheers got louder, and John caught sight of Taylla and Ronan clapping along with the rest of them. Now, all that remains is for me to hand you over to Dr. Z and the ZPMs, who have promised us music to dance the night away to. In that case, Lorne bowed, may I have the first dance, Dr. Weir? Elizabeth smiled. I would be delighted, Major Lorne. They stepped down from the stage as Roddick and his band. John recognized Simpson, Roddick, and Esposito, but couldn't remember the name of the trombone player or the clarinetist. Tuned up. Wanna go? Rodney asked, touching his elbow to guide him to the edge of the room. John thought about it. People had begun to drift away already, but they should stay for a few songs, or it would look too suspicious. They could slip away once the dancing started. We could stay for a few songs. Well, it will give me even more to mock Roddick about, Rodney allowed. They settled back against the wall and watched the dancing. Lorne was surprisingly good, but Elizabeth had two left feet. He caught sight of Cadman, her bright blonde hair easy to spot, approaching Ronan and tugging him onto the dance floor, laughing. That could be interesting, he remarked, pointing. She can cope, Rodney said. Roddick's band was surprisingly good, even if the jazz and sling they were playing wasn't really to his taste. He grinned when he processed what Esposito was singing. I don't care what the weatherman says when the weatherman says it's raining. You'll never hear me complain. I'm certain of sunshine. Someone's got a sense of humor, Rodney said. Actually, it's one of my favorite songs. I asked Roddick if they would play it for me. Elizabeth joined them, holding a paper bag which she gave to Rodney. Your prize. Don't drink it all at once, Rodney. Notice how she doesn't even pretend you'll share it? John said, bumping Rodney's hip. I could be persuaded. Rodney's voice was teasing, and suddenly John wanted to get out of there now. I think that's one of the things I don't want to know about, Elizabeth said, laughing. You're quite right, so if you'll excuse us, Rodney said, already moving towards the door. You'd better go, Elizabeth said to him. No one will notice, and take the morning off tomorrow. See? What did I tell you? Born romantic, Rodney said. I could change my mind, you know, she said. We're going, Rodney said hastily. They kept it together until they reached the transporter, where Rodney promptly pushed him against the door and kissed him, hard. We won the tug of war, he said, like he couldn't believe it. John laughed. We sure did. And we nearly broke the world record with our airplane. Rodney kissed him again, hands threaded up into his hair, mouth soft and sweet. It was a good airplane, John agreed, a little short of breath. And we have the morning off tomorrow. Rodney moved onto his neck, nibbling lightly. Elizabeth has great ideas. Kinda don't want to hear about Elizabeth right now, John panted. All I'm saying is we have a lot to celebrate, Rodney said, mouthing his scar. Another excellent idea, John agreed. It could be the naked kind of celebrating? Rodney worked his hands up under John's shirt. It could, John agreed, touching the screen for his quarters and tipping Rodney's head up for another kiss. The end.
Couple kids running loose and wild. And he kissed her, she said, mister, take an inch and I'll give you a mile. I ain't here to do anything halfway, don't give a damn what anyone might say. I just want a free fall for a while. About midnight, he tells her, I ain't got no come on line.